This is Jonathan Armstrong starting off our Tech Law 10 podcast for this week, where I'm afraid the man flu season has already started in London. And Eric, you're in San Francisco today.
I'm in a very, very sunny San Francisco. Summer finally decided to come on September 20th. So we were broiling last night, and we have no trace of fog and no flu or cold, so I hope you feel better soon.
Yeah, thank you. And you've been out and about today at the California State Bar Convention. What were you up to there then?
Yes, it was actually the end of last week, but I served on a panel with one of your friends from Austria and another colleague from Germany, and we were talking about global comprehensive privacy management at the California State Bar Convention in Long Beach.
It sounds good.
Yeah, and what we were talking about in some ways was, you know, the differences between the privacy regimes here in the United States and overseas. And naturally, I was speaking from the United States perspective. And I've spoken on this topic before, and I know you have as well, so I'm sure you can chime in from the other side of the pond, notwithstanding your cold. And I guess, you know, the overarching points we were making were as follows. Privacy regulation is, in a general sense, more strict in Europe. And as I like to say, in sort of generic terms, you know, Europe is more of an opt-in program, whereas the United States is more opt-out. We seem to more jealously guard our freedom of speech rights here in the United States. Americans like to speak and talk at people, and as the law develops here, there's a lot of protection for that, you know, so long as you're not actually causing somebody true tangible harm by defaming them. If you say something false and it causes damage, that's actionable in a court of law. But nevertheless, you know, freedom of speech reigns supreme here. When it comes to privacy, you know, quite a number of people, for example, are surprised there's no one overarching federal law that deals with privacy regulation and the internet, for example. We take more of a sector approach. We have, when it comes to federal privacy laws, for example, we have Gramm-Leach-Bliley, which applies to financial and related, you know, economic kind of data, banking data. Huh. We have what's called HIPAA, which deals with protection of medical and healthcare information. We even have a law, very specific law, that deals with protecting privacy in terms of videos that you rent. Do you know where that came from, Jonathan? What the impetus for that was?
No, what was that?
Well, once upon a time, back in the Reagan era, he was trying to get on the United States Supreme Court, a potential Supreme Court justice by the name of Robert Bork. And when Bork's confirmation hearings were happening before the United States Senate, some journalists started rummaging around, and they uncovered information that suggested that Mr. Bork was renting adult-oriented videos. And that cast a pall on his potential Supreme Court candidacy because, you know, he's very conservative and, you know, family values and all that type of thing. And this came to light. So all of a sudden, Congress enacted a law on that one very narrow issue. And that's sort of part of our tapestry or our patchwork of privacy laws, not so much overarching. And also, when it comes to sort of online privacy, what's very common here is, for example, if you go to a website, you'll see the terms and conditions, and the website will generally tell you, you know, here's the information we collect, here's what we do with it, and if you don't like it, you have an opportunity to opt out, as opposed to in Europe, where I believe generally, and you'll speak to this in a moment, it's more permission-based. You have to get permission, you know, up front. And then there's been a lot of self-regulation when it comes to privacy here. There's been somewhat of a hands-off approach, with the idea being that, you know, companies should monitor themselves in terms of how they handle personally identifiable information, so long as they're being transparent to the public. And, you know, I've advised clients on privacy policies and how to build them, and the one thing I tell them is, you know, don't just ask for and put up, for example, on a website, a platinum perfect privacy policy that guarantees 100% protection if you're not going to follow through. Because the quickest way to get into trouble with the Federal Trade Commission here is to promise terrific privacy protection, which is a nice promise, but if you don't follow through, then you've essentially misrepresented your intentions to people with respect to their data. And then otherwise, we talked about some other topics like behavioral or targeted advertising. For example, Jonathan, if you go onto Amazon and you buy some golf clubs because you're an avid golfer, and then the next few times you show up, and I can't recall if I've spoken to this before, I might have, in Tech Law 10, you know, your experience becomes more user-friendly because then they're pushing at you other golf-related products, which could be nice for you because it's in the sweet spot of your interests. On the other hand, if you bought, you know, a cooking book for your mother for Mother's Day, and now you're getting all sorts of cooking-related services and products pushed at you, you might resent that because it's not what you want. And so here, again, the Federal Trade Commission has enunciated some principles that companies need to be transparent about what they're doing in terms of tracking people and how they're pushing information at them in a customized way and giving people, again, the opportunity to opt out. So that's a somewhat short version of some of the topics we spoke at as part of our panel. I'd be interested in your reactions.
Yeah, no, it does sound an interesting panel, and I think you're right that there are cultural differences really between Europe and the US on this. It used to be an old cliche, I guess, that it used to be the case that the US almost has no privacy law but rigorously enforces it, whereas Europe had lots and lots of law but rarely enforced it. And I think that's definitely changing now on both sides of the pond. As you say, there are different sectoral-based privacy laws. And obviously, in some cases, data security law over there can have the effect of almost being a privacy law, although obviously regulating the effects rather than prevention. In Europe, I think you're absolutely right that we tend, certainly as far as things like cookies, things like marketing purposes, to rely on opt-in as a general rule going forward rather than opt-out. And I think that the law is getting more and more aggressive on that. And then the other piece of the equation, I guess, that's changed in the last 3 years or so is whilst ever these laws have been on the statute books forever, most people make the mistake, of course, of thinking that the EU directive is the start of data protection and privacy laws in Europe, whereas it isn't. You know, the UK, for example, had privacy law in place since 1984. Countries like Hungary, for example, had new data protection laws as the first act almost after the fall of the Berlin Wall. So privacy law's been here for 20 years or more in some countries, but what is different is enforcement, and that is certainly toughening up in many European countries, the UK included. The UK privacy regulator has maybe brought about 12, 15 different prosecutions or regulatory enforcements since the spring, and that is substantially more than the major cases that have been brought in previous years. So I think that you're right that the environment here is toughening, and this free speech argument normally doesn't play in Europe. So you get cases like, for example, Linkfist, which is one of the most well-known cases at a European level, where effectively the facts there are that a number of people were being prepared for a Catholic communion. The person who was leading them through the communion process didn't want them to be concerned by the fact that one of the parishioners didn't kneel at the altar rail and said, you know, he doesn't kneel at the altar rail because he has a health problem. And that in itself triggered a large privacy action. You know, nobody had any bad intent there, really. The person leading those through the communion process was just trying to make all of this easier for them, but still privacy law came into play and overrode the good intentions of the person concerned. So I think we do eternally have conflicts. And even when people have consented, particularly in an employer-employer relationship, oftentimes that consent is not good enough, because some countries in Europe say that you can't take a valid consent from an employee because they're the slave and you're the master, and we abolished slavery a long time ago. So these are very emotive issues in Europe, and you're right that in some respects we are converging in terms of our attitudes to privacy, but in some respects the legislative approach is diverging, I think. So it sounds like a great panel, and it is an ever-changing theme, I think.
Yes, it is. And just to sort of wrap up, I mean, one thing we talked about is that there really has been rigorous enforcement here, even sort of the lighter laws, if you will, because we have had an active Federal Trade Commission, and also we have the whole class action mechanism under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23, so that even if, you know, a person here and there might suffer, you know, relatively minimal harm from a privacy breach, if somebody can bring a class action on behalf of thousands of people, then the remedy vis-a-vis the company that allowed the privacy or the private information to be disclosed could, you know, suffer substantial damages in a court of law. All right, well, I think we're now at our Tech Law 11. We've gone over about a minute. Let's all wish Jonathan a speedy recovery from his cold, and we will talk to you soon about the next topic to continue your dialogue with us. As Jonathan frequently mentions, we're available at Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm Eric Sinrod, ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. Jonathan, if you want to take us home and wrap up.
Yes, thanks. I'm JP Armstrong at duanemorris.com. On Twitter, I'm ArmstrongJP. And do join us in our Tech Law 10 after podcast discussion forum. We've just set that up a couple of weeks ago. And we'll post materials relating to this week's podcast there. To do that, just go to the LinkedIn homepage, drop down the groups box, top right of the screen, type in Tech Law 10, and you'll find us that way. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.